I'm a widower now.
Yeah.
You know, you know, when you fill out applications or you go through things, you know, you never expect to click a widower. I knew I loved her, like, right instantly. It was like magic, like just a fairy tale. I almost lost faith in my Catholicism, that I was Catholic, raised Catholic. I was, you know, I don't believe anymore.
Yeah.
And maybe I will again, but it's going to take me some time. Because for her to leave the way she did, it was just unfair. Yeah. My idol was to be a Maradona. I wanted to be a superstar. I wanted to be a soccer player. And I like hanging out with wealthy people.
Yeah.
And why are they wealthy? Because they're very smart.
Yeah.
And they've already made it. They're successful. My boss, John, never forget him. He taught me what it was like to make a dollar and how easy it was to, you know, lose it. You got to find something that you're good at. Not that you're really passionate about, but something you're really good at.
Hi, and welcome to the I Love Success podcast. Before we get started, I just want to say thank you for deciding to listen to this episode. Thank you for making a conscious decision to be open to learn and improve in order to lead a better life. And even though I have a big mission to help at least 10 million people in 10 years to achieve their dreams, right now, you are the most important person to me. So please help me on my mission by being the best version of yourself, give it your all, and most importantly, don't forget to enjoy the ride. This week's guest is James Ortega, founder of Futboleros, known as the Harlem Globetrotters of soccer. Futboleros is a group of professional athletes who perform amazing soccer tricks. Futboleros capture the heart of many fans who admire their choreographed soccer shows and high level of energy performances. They have performed for companies such as ESPN, Fox Sports, LA Galaxy, Pepsi, Coca-Cola, Adidas, AT&T, Disney, and many more. Let's welcome the king of Futboleros, James Ortega. Welcome, James.
Thank you for having me. This is an honor. Nice to meet you.
It's an honor to have you here. And as I told you, I've met you, I've seen you in action many times before, and then we kind of connected online, and I was always curious, you know, when I see someone that does something, it's so easy to just admire the tricks that you do with a ball, but it's usually so much more behind a person that dedicates his life to spread this joy in this world. So I just want to start with talking about, like, your early life. Where were you born and where did you grow up, and when did you find love for soccer, you know?
So I was born in Ecuador, Quito, Ecuador, and I have four siblings, and we moved to the States when I was 3 years old. We moved to New York City, actually to the Bronx.
Wow.
And from there we ended up going to Meriden, Connecticut, which is a small town suburbs. My dad was a big soccer player in Ecuador. He was short for his height, but he was a great little goalkeeper. And his passion was soccer. And I guess it's in the blood for us. So everyone in my family played soccer. I have three older brothers and an older sister. And even my sister was the first girl to play on a varsity high school soccer team, boys team.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of followed them. And at an early age, we played soccer every day outside. And we grew up across the cemetery, and we used to use the tombstones as goals and dribbling skills. And we would juggle for hours on top of trees. And we would just juggle and see who can juggle the most. And that was our childhood, you know, and we were outdoors every day. It was a whole different upbringing to what the kids nowadays have. We didn't have the technology, you know, with the phones and the iPads and the big screen TVs. We had a Reader's Digest, you know, we had the morning newspaper. And it was outdoors. That's where we grew up. We grew up kick the can, you know, tag, freeze games, you know, collecting lightning bugs, going out and catching frogs, going fishing. And that was my up here. But I knew early age, like 12, 14, I was very good at soccer. I played every sport, about 9 different sports. I played basketball, football, baseball, hockey, tennis, track and field, swimming. I made all the sports in during school. So, but my dad said, you got to concentrate on one, you know, and you need education because you just can't play every sport. You got to give your son, you know, your body rest and your mind some rest. But I wasn't like that. I was a 24/7 kid who didn't like to sleep, and I never stayed home. I came home to eat, and I was out the door. Yeah. And like today, you just can't do that, you know, for the kids. You just say, Mom, I'm going out. I'll be back. And Mom and Dad never asked a question like, where are you going? They kind of knew where you were always going to be around the neighborhood.
I know. It's so crazy. When I think about my life or my childhood and my parents, like, I'm going out, and they didn't ask questions. I did everything. Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, wait a minute, I'm going to have kids soon. So like, what's my plan? Do I want them to like just do anything? But I think there was a different time, more trust, and I don't know.
Well, I think the world was safer back then.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody, there was not a lot of crime as it is now. And as many people actually too. So, but, you know, on every given day, we'd be at the park and there would be another 20, 30, 50 kids out there. If you drive by parks nowadays, if you're not playing on a team or an organization, yeah, you're not out there.
Yeah.
Back then, kids would just wander from anywhere and they would just be there, and we'd have pickup games, and there would be the older guys who would be there, and that's how I learned all my soccer, was from older, playing with older players.
Yes.
That were from Italy, from Portugal, from, they were Poland, and we lived in the Irish community.
Yeah.
There was Puerto Ricans,
yeah,
you know, and back east, that's what there's a lot of Puerto Ricans, a lot of Hispanics, but there was no Mexicans. Like, yeah, here, it's all, you know, Mexicans in greater LA. So I grew up in that environment. And when you play with players who are very good, you learn tricks and you learn, you know, all the trade, you know, the soccer. And that's how I grew a passion for it. So I knew at an early age I was good. And everybody wanted me on their teams, and everybody wanted me to travel on teams. And I played really well at college. I made All-State All-American, and I, you know, got a scholarship to go play college soccer in Connecticut, in Quinnipiac, Hamden, Connecticut. And then I tried out for the Wichita Wings, the Professional Indoor Soccer League, back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. One thing that I've kind of, because I study success, so I'm very curious about this, and I know a lot of successful people do a lot of things, but if we look at sometimes the best, they tend to focus on one thing, right?
Yes.
And can we just talk a little bit about that? When did you decide that I'm fed up with doing all these things. I want to focus on one thing, and I'm going to want to be really good at it.
I think I got to that point after I went through my depression, because I was very suicidal.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody knew. I didn't even see doctors for it.
Did you tell anyone?
I went on the ground. I only told my family, my immediate friends.
Yeah.
I ended up losing my contracts with Beverly Hills. I ended up losing all my party business. I ended up giving up my stores. I lost everything. To me, money didn't matter then, because I couldn't even figure my name out.
Yeah.
Like my dad, I remember telling me, he goes, you're not my son. I think I've lost you. Your soul is gone inside. There's no more James, like passion. You're listening to me now. This is my life.
Yeah,
this is the way I am.
I have so much energy. And I remember from seeing you from before, like, it's always energy.
So my job, my business has to be that. You can't have dead air.
Yeah.
Just like when we're on the radio.
Yeah.
When you're entertaining anywhere from 10 kids to 80,000 people in a stadium, you got to move.
Yeah.
You got to constantly give that energy, because I drive from that energy. That energy gives me life. So it's been, it changed my life for those 4 years. I mean, I went to South America to try and go through the Celestine Prophecy.
Yeah.
You know, if you've ever heard that book. I try to have the Indians, you know, do treatment on me to release
ayahuasca, whatever, and things like that.
You know.
Or,
well, I'm Inca Indian.
Yeah.
So I'm coming from the Incas, you know, where we, you know, from the stars, from, you know, intellectual inside, you know, you live a high free spirit, you know, you don't, you allow only good things to enter you, you know, but subconsciously you don't think about it. You don't do it. We just do it internally.
Yeah.
You know, so that's how I live my life. But
did that help to go there?
No,
no,
it really didn't. Because when you're in a time where you're suicidal and you don't want to wake up and you don't want to know anything. I mean, I didn't have any money. I adopted a dog that I think if I didn't adopt the dog at the time I did and he stuck with me, I would have lost it. But I ended up coming back. Someone contacted me and said, hey, Nike's looking for someone like you. why don't you come and do an audition? I literally flew back from Ecuador. My mom put me on a plane and said, you need to do this.
Yeah.
So when I went, I was very kind of hesitant about it. I didn't know, I couldn't release myself. But after the first event, I kind of got into it. And they really liked me. I knew they liked me. But I didn't have the same personality. And little by little, I came out and then I became the host, the MC. They gave me a mic and I got on it and I was able to do what I... And back then, I didn't know the tricks that I know today.
Yeah.
It's taken me almost, 15 years to get to where I am now, where I can do a trick without even blinking my eye.
Yeah, it's to master a craft takes a lot of time. Yeah. But I want to talk a little bit about like the depression, because I think there's a lot of people that are depressed or feeling low, but they don't know where it comes from, And sometimes it's so hard, because I'm talking to you now. Now when you look back at your life, do you know where it come from? Do you have any advice to tell anyone else that are in that situation right now?
I mean, all I know at that moment in time, you have no answers. Like when I woke up one day and I woke up like I lost my name.
Yeah.
I didn't know who I was.
Because you failed in business or like you felt like a failure?
I think it was just something that just like something, it felt like somebody went into my soul and just took my whole heart, my energy out. And I don't know how was done. I woke up one day and that's what happened. I can't tell anybody because everybody has different experiences.
Yeah.
They lose a job, they lose a relative, they lose a family member. But mine was more just a shutdown. I mean, it's like turning the engine off and you're just, and there's nothing turns on. So whatever I did for those 4 years that I lost time of who knows what could have happened in my destiny, all I know is that I was silent for those 4 years. And when I came back, it took me almost 2 to 3 years to really come back. And by that time, I lost all friendships. I think I connected with maybe one or two. But all I know is that when I came back, my family was always there. And they didn't believe me because they're like, you're James, man. Why are you crying?
You're that happy.
Why are you depressed? Get out. Go out. Go date. Go have fun. Go have a drink. And it wasn't about that. I just didn't have anything inside of me. I had no heart, no soul. Now, I don't know if I can tell anybody what to do, but all I knew is that I slept a lot. I walked my dog every day, and I could drive in my car, get to somewhere, and I would never get out of my car. I would sleep in my car. It's not healthy. And then I had suicidal thoughts. And how am I going to plan my death? Will anybody remember me? All these thoughts go through your mind.
So basically you got out of it because someone believed in you and asked you to come back, right?
I think that would happen. Yeah. But it took a while for me to get to that point where I was so comfortable on the microphone.
Yeah.
It was me all over again, but in a better way.
Yeah.
And maybe that silence, that emptiness that I had made me stronger
because
I failed a lot. I lost everything I had. Yeah. But I recouped everything back in an entertainment way where I was able to show my talent off and make people smile.
I think this is a great lesson to learn for people that are seeing someone that is not feeling good. Reach out the hand because, when you spend too much time, for a person, I've been an athlete, so I've failed so many times, and people act weird around failure, around debt, around depression. People don't want to be around it, right? Because it's awkward. But don't be that person. If you're part of our mission, if you see someone, reach out to them. Try to talk to them. It might not work, but sometimes all we need is acknowledgement, right? And get that belief from somebody, right?
Yeah, I even with my own family, they didn't want to believe that I was at a place that low. And it was hard. My dad took it really hard on me. He took it hard on himself.
Yeah.
He was really, he lost that person, even my mom. And, my brothers were kind of a little bit, they didn't want to believe me. I think they didn't want to accept it. I think that was hard.
Yeah.
And I had a few friends who I've known for years that kind of said, I'll help you out. I'll get you what you need. And I never wanted to leave my house.
Yeah.
Only to walk my dog and that was it. And he was like a mentor. He was like a friend to me.
Yeah.
I wish I had the answers
yeah.
to go back and help people to for yeah. what I mean, Life hits you with different tragedies.
Yeah.
You know, I'm facing one this year.
Yeah.
You know, which is not, it's a real tragedy.
Yeah.
You know, but.
Do you want to share that with us?
It's hard. Yeah. You know, it's hard to speak about it because then I get emotional and I feel like I cry enough every day.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, we, almost a year ago now, my wife passed away after giving birth to our daughter.
I'm so sorry.
And it was a complicated birth. It was a deadly birth. The doctors in the hospital have never seen anything like it. So, I'm a widower now.
Yeah.
You know, when you fill out applications or you go do things, you know, you never expect to click a widower. You know, you're either married, divorced, or single.
Yeah.
But not a widower. So I have a 4.5-year-old son, and I have a daughter who's will be turning 1 year old on the 14th. And my wife passed away on the 18th, a year ago. I don't know how I've survived in a year. It's really difficult. I have a lot of moments when I'm alone, and then I have moments when I listen to a song. Yeah. I have a hard time doing a lot of things that remind me of her. We spent 7 years together. I go to movies and I cry, and my son goes, "Dad, it's okay, mommy's with us."
Yeah.
You know, I love my wife to death. The hardest thing was being there to witness it, from being the happiest moment when you bring a child into this world, and then her being able to see her, and then her going 20 minutes later to the ICU. You know, it's going to be the hardest thing that I have to deal with in life. And this one, this is things that you read about in the newspapers,
yeah,
or you listen to it on the TV, and you always think like, oh my gosh, isn't that awful? Isn't that tragic?
Yeah.
Young age, 37 years old, she had a baby delivered, and the baby's perfectly fine. And then 5 days later, she doesn't make it.
I'm sorry.
It's hard. It's a process. It's a new norm. Having to make decisions that are probably the hardest ones, and because you have, when you have a partner that you can trust and you can relate to, you make decisions together.
Yeah.
So for this past year, I've been making decisions on my own, and I don't know if they're the right decisions, but inside I feel good. You know.
Yeah.
I think my kids, I mean, my daughter will never know who she was. My 4.5-year-old son is, misses her every day.
Yeah.
We pray to only her.
Yeah.
I almost lost faith in my Catholicism that I was Catholic, raised Catholic. I was,
yeah,
and I don't believe anymore.
Yeah.
And maybe I will again, but it's going to take me some time.
Yeah.
Because for her to leave the way she did, it was just unfair. You'd never think it would happen to you. And as strong as I am, it's just, you know, you're so weak inside because all you can do is grieve.
Yeah.
And you cry on a daily basis,
yeah,
going to events, flying home to your kids, knowing she's never going to be there.
So
knowing
sorry.
She can't see what I do every day. She was my number one fan. She loved my job. She thought it was the best job in the whole world. And my son would come to all my events when he could, and she would come and support me. You know?
Yeah.
Now I don't have that. I can't pick up the phone when I'm done and say, "Honey, I'm coming home," or, you know, or, "Honey, did you see my photos?" You know, you can't do that.
Yeah.
So now I live for my kids. I live for them. I moved out of LA and I moved to South Bend, Indiana, where she grew up, and I'm raising her the way she was raised with her grandparents. And the kids have really likened to living there, and it's a whole different world, but I feel closer to her there. So my life now has completely changed.
I mean, you're honoring her every day, and I'm so sorry for your loss. You know, it's so crazy with life because you don't know, you never know what's gonna happen, right? And that's like, how do we know how to live, you know? How do we live our best life every day? Like, how do we do that?
I mean, for me now, it's knowing that she's looking down on us. I want to believe everybody that acknowledges what happened to me, you know. Mm-hmm. They all pray for me.
Yeah.
They all believe in God. They all believe that she's in a better place, that, you know, she went for a reason. And they always said, God takes the better ones, you know. But I think of how unfair it was because she was a great person. She didn't deserve to be taken so early. Yeah. I mean, she'll never be able to see the kids, raise the kids. She'll be never be able to hold them, you know. I mean, she has siblings that miss her to death, her own mom and dad, and everybody else who knew her. She was an amazing person. She was a celebrity in her own town. Mm-hmm. They've owned the restaurant for over 90 years, and she was raised on the tables and above the restaurant. Mm-hmm. So she was a hostess. Mm-hmm. And she was loved by everybody who knew her, and she was a wonderful person. She has a son, you know, who's my stepson, and he was, you know, we connected in every way or form. And when I met her, I was at a time where I gave up on women. I gave up on relationships. I gave up on dating. And we met at a restaurant right here in Santa Monica. And she was here to see Notre Dame play against USC, which is it's a rivalry every other year here. And she did not want to come to LA. She wanted to go to Florida, which she loved going to with her mom.
You didn't want to meet anyone.
And I didn't. My friend kept insisting that I go out on Thanksgiving Eve.
Yeah.
To go to, you know, have a couple drinks at a couple bars.
Yeah.
And see friends who like came in for Thanksgiving, and I was hesitant, but he dragged me out, and it was the best thing I did. And I was at the restaurant, and we were sitting there, and she walked by, and I said, "Wow." And that was it. And the next thing you know, we spent the next 4 days while she was in town together. I got to meet her mom, and I knew I loved her, like, right instantly. It was like a magic, like, just a fairy tale of, you know, an angel hitting you over the head with and sprinkled powder over you, and you just became a new guy. And that was it. And we were married 6 months later.
But isn't it crazy, like, how life happens? It can change in an instant, right?
Yes, for me it has.
Yeah.
And in many ways, in a great way, in other bad ways, and in the tragic ways.
Yeah.
You know, so now for me, I live life to the fullest. I respect people for true face value. I still want to believe in what I've always believed as a young kid. But I think life now has challenged me to think differently. You know, and so for me, I do things now without my wife.
Yeah.
And I live for my kids. And I want to make sure my kids have everything. Yeah. And not in a spoiled way, but in what I would, when I grew up, I had everything. Yeah. My dad didn't have everything, but he gave us what he could.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that.
Yeah.
And till this day, I didn't need to have like the $100 pair of sneakers. Yeah. I was happy with the Converse that cost $8, $12 at that time. I was happy with a used t-shirt from a flea market, and it didn't matter. And everybody is spoiled nowadays, you know? And because of all the technology, you know, kids, you know, are not as we were when I grew up, you know, because I'm not young anymore, you know? I'm 51 years old.
Wow.
And
you're in great shape.
Thank you. That's 3-4 miles a day and 2-3 shows a day, you know, 300 events a year.
Wow.
So it's, you know, I value different things now, you know, but I want my kids to be raised in a good environment like I did, I was. Yeah. And for me, I think the best decision was for me to move to South Bend, Indiana. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big Notre Dame fan. Yeah. And the lifestyle there is laid back. Yeah. It's very simple. I can go to Costco and there's only like 25 cars in the parking lot.
Yeah.
I can go to Walmart, Home Depot, and I can count every car that's on the lot.
Yeah.
And over here, it's like Black Friday every day.
Yeah.
Christmas Eve every day. Yeah. And over there, I got to worry about the ducks crossing or a tractor crossing, yeah. You know. And so life for me, is better. Yeah. It, but at the same time, I've lost somebody who, you know, was a mother of my children, and I'm alone. Yeah. I'm not gonna lie to you. Yeah. I'm alone every day. No matter how many family members and how many friends I have out there, and how much they, you know, they praise me and they tell me how good of a dad I am, and what I did was, you know, courageous, and inside it, you're dead. You're really dead inside. So, and my wife said, don't ever stop performing. Don't ever stop doing your company until your knees give out. And I know I have another 5 years or even 10 years. But until then, I'll keep doing what, which I know she loved me, seeing me do the most.
That's awesome.
And so hopefully my son will follow my footsteps. Yeah.
Does he like soccer?
Yeah, he loves it. Yeah. I built a soccer field for him in the backyard.
Oh, that's awesome. So you have a big backyard.
I have a very big backyard. I don't have a windowsill back here or a sidewalk. I have an entire backyard. Yeah. I got him a pirate ship of three decks.
Yeah.
He has trampolines. He has everything. He has a zip line.
Yeah.
You know, he has everything. We have a lake where we can go to, you know, from her family side. And we have boats and jet skis. And we live a very simple life now. Yeah. But it's a great life.
Yeah.
And I look forward to it. It's been fresh. It's been only 4 months since we've left L.A. And I look forward to raising my kids and showing them who their mother was, and who was my wife, and you know, who we met, and I have photo albums on the tables, and we have photos everywhere of her, and every night we pray to her, you know, we thank her for giving us.
That's how it should be, and it's so good that you have this support system. I know that you feel lonely, but there's many people that are showing you love at this time, and like how do we do this to other people? Like, how do we help them when they're going through things like that? Like, what could people do to help you in this situation?
Well, a lot of times I call people
when
I'm having a bad moment. And a lot of times I feel guilty calling them because I don't want to share my sadness to them.
Yeah.
Because I'm a happy person.
Yeah.
And I've always been that. But when you got to share that sad news, I have a 2-hour drive from Chicago to South Bend. And I remember when my wife picked me up from the airport and we drove all the way there. And she was telling me everything about what it was going to be like to go there and visit. It was a whole new world.
Yeah.
So the hardest thing is going on that route. Every day I have to go back home from all my travels. And not only that, I mean, I'm on the plane. And other than socializing and what I do and what I did, it's not the same being able to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, all I can tell is that when you're grieving, you're sad, reach out to people.
Yeah.
It makes me feel better. Yeah. I know it'll make you feel better. And I've started to write things down a little bit. And I call people now and just to tell them I love them, thank them. So I think I've gotten close to the people that I want to be close to. And there's so many people that I know. And I can't reach out to everyone because then I don't even have time for myself.
Yeah.
So I always thank people for reading when I post something on my Facebook. And that's where I always do my own personal stuff. So, you know, I wrote the other day, the hardest thing is driving to South Bend.
Yeah.
It breaks me in the heart and my tears on all levels. And not only that, I have to listen to my son tell me how much he misses mom every night before we go to bed and when we wake up. So there's a lot of good, and then there's a lot of heart and pain, hurtful, painful stuff inside that goes through someone, especially when you lose something like this, you know, and someone who is close to you.
One thing that I think really want to ask you, because you're a performer and you perform so much, what do you want to say to other people that want to be good at performing, but they're so nervous that they get, that they their performance goes down instead of going up when they perform?
Well, I can tell you this. I still get nervous when I perform.
And that's so good.
I make people clap so they can feel the same energy I clap.
Yeah.
So when you walk into the room, depends on what the occasion is.
Yeah.
For me, it's a bunch of 200 to 300 kids waiting for me to school. So as soon as I get my gear and I get my audio, I always say, welcome everybody, how's everyone doing today? And then boom, it just starts. Or I could just twist the ball right on my a finger, you know, and you win everybody's heart just by doing this.
Yeah.
Or just by bouncing the ball on your head.
Yeah.
And I take a deep breath and I go, I can do this.
Yeah. That's the mindset, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I always wear sunglasses too.
Yeah.
So maybe that kind of hides myself a little bit, but you know, my nickname is Hollywood, and I've always worn sunglasses when I performed in every occasion.
Yeah. It's almost like you're taking your mask on. Here I go. Now we perform.
I'm like a superhero.
Yeah.
And so when I put on my uniform, I feel so good.
Yeah.
And then when I have my sunglasses on, I always carry two or three. So I don't know which ones I want.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's take a deep breath and just feel the crowd. I get my energy from the kids. Sometimes I have tough crowds. I mean, they don't even crack a smile.
Yeah.
And sometimes I got to do middle schools, and they think they know it all.
Yeah.
And they're even harder. And you go to high school, forget it.
Yeah.
So the elementary schools, man, you win their heart just by twisting spinning the ball on your finger, putting it up on your head, walking like a seal, you know, and then doing cool around the world. But for me, it's not about all the tricks.
Yeah.
It's about the engagement between you and I. It's about how I can make you smile, make you feel good. And for me, every time I go up on stage, and I have really big events where I'm performing in front of 4,000 or 5,000 people, and yes, I mess up, but it's okay. In schools, it's a little easier, but when you're in front of people and you're big corporations, you're in front of ESPN, in front of 200 of the you know, officials in there who make decisions, you know, who are about to air World Cup, and you're on stage in New York City at the Lions Theater, you know, and you're about to perform. And you just can't mess up.
Yeah.
So you're either going to make it big or you're just going to crash.
Yeah.
And there, your mind is, you get into a whole mindset of just, you can do this. And your heart's racing regardless. But as soon as you touch that ball or you start speaking or something, that action that you see someone's face react, that breaks the ice.
You're a winner. You're a performer. And you talk positive to yourself. And that's amazing. And one thing, like, speaking of that, it's not easy to do that. And I love what you said. I still get nervous. The day you don't get nervous, don't do it anymore. That's what I say, you know, because a lot of people say, I don't want to be nervous. Yeah, you want to be nervous, but you want to be able to control being nervous.
You
right?
want to be, yes.
Because that's what excites you. It means that you're doing something right. James, I'm so grateful that you were here today and that you shared so open-heartedly. And
thank you.
We truly feel for you and we send you love. And we hope your wife are looking down at you and is super proud. And I want to thank everybody that watched and listened to this episode. And if you want to learn more about the Futboleros, check them out on social media. Maybe book them for a cool event.
Yeah.
And if you want to learn more about I Love Success, go to ilovesuccess.co. Share amazing conversations just like the one we did today. I want to help people. I can't do it myself. So share this with someone that believes in themselves or maybe someone that you want to help in some little way. Because sometimes we need a hand and sometimes we need to get a hand and sometimes we need to give a hand. So please do that and I'll see you guys next week. Thank you. Bye-bye.